This might be the best time of year to be a professional sports writer. You have the NFL starting off, you have college football, you have the pennant races, you have the World Series coming up and the baseball playoffs. And right now you have the WNBA playoffs going on. You also have the beginning of hockey and basketball training camps. I have an interesting decision to make this week. I'm going to tell you about it. We're going to go through our two-minute drill, and then I'm going to have on David Barry, the internationally famous sports economist, professor of economics at Southern Utah University, really a great basketball analyst, a great sports analyst, and I love getting away from, you know, my own realm of other sports writers and athletes and people who all kind of think the same way and bringing on somebody who has a very clear vision of what wins basketball games, what makes a good organization. Dave's just a fun guy to talk to as well. So we're going to do that in the segment known as 10 Minutes or More with Someone I Don't Hate. We'll get to the two-minute drill here in a second. I do want to tell you that we appreciate the sponsorship of Pizza Luce. We did the Cheryl Reeve show there a couple of weeks ago. We did the Chin Music Show with Lavelle Neal III and Roy Smalley at the Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie. This last week, it was a blast. We appreciate their sponsorship. And we are going to do another live show at Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie. It's going to be, I believe, October 20th. Keep checking our social media as we update, but the tentative plan is October 20th for Lavelle, Roy, and myself. They're great storytellers. It was a blast to do that with them. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. This is TalkNorth.com. Find all the shows at TalkNorth.com. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod. Best way to listen, subscribe at your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to advertise with this show or the network, you can reach Karen Cleary at K-C-L-E-A-R-Y at TalkNorth.com. Now, Brandon's going to run us through the two-minute drill.
All right, starting the two-minute drill off with Lynx over Vikings.
So because this is a packed time of year for a sports writer, and believe me, in this job, sometimes you wake up on a Tuesday morning and say, what the hell am I going to write about today? That's not the case this time of the year. There are multiple things competing for your attention. And I have a really interesting decision to make on Sunday, Brandon. The Lynx are playing their first playoff game, and the Vikings are playing what feels like, may not be, but it feels like a must-victory game, must-win game against the Seattle Seahawks, which is actually one of my favorite teams to cover because I like Pete Carroll, I like Russell Wilson, and they're a lot of fun to watch. U.S. Bank Stadium is probably going to be packed. The easy choice to make would be cover the Vikings. I mean, that's where the largest audience in Minnesota is. There's no doubt about it. The metrics all prove it. I'm going to go cover the Lynx game, though. I would rather cover a playoff game than a regular season game. I also think it's important to cover women's sports when it's not convenient. And I admire what the Lynx do in our community. Obviously, I have an investment. I have Cheryl Reeve show at TalkNorth.com. But I'd like to think that even if I didn't have that show on the network, I would still want to do this because it's a true must-win game. It's not a possibly must-win game. It's a true must-win game. The Lynx have to win to advance. They could go on a playoff run here. And I just think, you know, I got to put my money where my mouth is and go cover women's sports if I want to be a promoter of women's sports. So I will be at Target Center on Sunday instead of U.S. Bank Stadium, and I am looking forward to it.
It should be a really good game against this guy, too. So it'll be a fun matchup to watch regardless. So
it will be. And I really like James Wade, the Chicago coach. You're talking about Candace Parker, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. Vandersloot's a blast to watch. It's going to be really good basketball. And that's the other thing I have to say about women's sports, the WNBA. It's not like some kind of act of charity to cover it or watch it. It's great basketball. It's intense. It's highly skilled athletes. It's, you know, Sylvia Fowles, Candace Parker, two of the greatest players who ever lived. It's great stuff. I do it because I'm entertained by it. And I'm, you know, and yes, I think it also serves a larger purpose as far as equality and equity in our society. And I really admire the WNBA players, the WNBA employees who stand for all the right things. But it's also just really good basketball.
Well, and it's fun to watch a game like a league evolve, too, because women's basketball, the WNBA now compared to 5 years ago, it's almost a completely different game. It's just so much faster and so much better, and it's constantly changing.
And if you're something of a sports historian, as I am, you remember when the NFL was considered a joke. And you remember when Major League Baseball was just, you know, they didn't have outfield fences. You remember when, I don't actually remember that, but I've read about it. You know, there was the ABA. You know, they didn't have big crowds for that. The early NBA couldn't get on prime time, couldn't get the NBA finals in prime time. I mean, all sports struggle to a certain point until a bunch of rich old white guys go, oh, well, this is an investment opportunity. I'm going to put my money here. The difference, as Cheryl always points out, is that in men's sports, the investment comes early and easily. And in women's sports, for some reason, we fight it. We pretend like you don't just throw money at these sports hoping that they will grow and eventually become a good investment. And of course, the WNBA right now is proving to be a good investment.
I think you're making a wise decision. All right, we'll take it down a notch and we'll go on to the next subject. Why the Vikings are in trouble.
So I'm going to go beyond just the 0-2 start and the fact that the next two games are going to be very difficult games. I mean, I picked this team to go 7-10. Not that predictions mean anything, but that's just where my mindset was with this team. And, you know, it's not just about talent, because this team has talent and this team has won games before, and it's won a playoff game in its recent history. I look at a team. These guys are always talking about what a family they are, how much they care about each other, and what they'll do for each other. And, you know, it's the theme around every sports team. But sometimes it's false. You know how I think this is false? Because Cousins, Thielen, Harrison Smith, and Dalvin Cook all were anti-vax. Now, maybe one or two of them have come around since then, but they were all anti-vax. It is the ultimate expression that you don't care about the person next to you when you will not get vaccinated, when you will ignore all the medical advice. And listen, there are probably some people out in the sticks in Minnesota who probably just don't know any better. And that's sad and that's wrong. But you can almost excuse it in certain parts of our society, certain parts of our country. These people have the best medical advisors and doctors and epidemiologists. I always say that wrong, but you know what I'm talking about. Coming in and explaining to them why they need to get vaccinated for their own sake, for the sake of those around them, for their families, and yes, for their team. How can I put any faith in a team that won't even have its best players do that for each other and for their franchise?
It's a weird, weird lack of leadership.
Really, it really is.
Next up, we have Reeve to run the Wolves.
So I keep getting asked, is Cheryl Reeve going to get placed in charge of the Minnesota Timberwolves? David Berry, and by the way, David Berry will, and I will be talking about that subject later in this show. Here's my question, Brandon. What do you have against Cheryl Reeve? I mean, why would you want to put Cheryl Reeve through that? What does she ever do to you? You're going to put her in charge of the worst franchise in basketball history, maybe in sports history. What did she ever do to you, Brandon?
I have no idea. I don't know.
So to answer that question seriously, I think there was a time after the dynasty ended, Maya left and Lindsay retired and Rebecca Brunson retired and Simone Augustus moved on. I think there was a window there. And this is kind of reading between the lines, talking to people who know Cheryl, getting a feel for my, you know, what Cheryl had to say about certain things when we'd have conversations. My gut was there was a window of time when Cheryl would have been willing to transition from Lynx boss to Timberwolves coach or Timberwolves general manager. I think it would have been a very comfortable thing. Okay, I've done my work here. I won 4 championships in 7 years. I did all you can do with a basketball franchise. I need a new challenge. Maybe I take a year off, then I come back and I coach the Wolves or I'm involved in the NBA and I help break down some barriers. I think that could have happened. The Wolves weren't smart enough to make any of that happen. Now, you're talking about Cheryl rebuilding a team that now has true championship aspirations. Maybe not this year, who knows? But you can see this group of players winning big again. And Carly Knox, you know, Cheryl's wife, is running the business operation. And the Lynx are trying to, you know, widen their footprint and really make a difference in both, you know, the world of sports and in our society. I just don't think that it's in Cheryl's mind. I don't think it's foremost in her mind anymore that this is the right time to leave the Lynx and go do something like that. I'm sure she could be talked into it under, you know, if everything was just presented to her in just the right way. But I don't think she's necessarily leaning that way. I think she's completely committed to the Lynx. That's my guess. She hasn't told me this. That's my guess. But I'm kind of being serious when I say, God, let's not ruin her life by putting her in charge of a dysfunctional franchise.
Well, and I think having her in the WNBA is so important to help lift up that league, because a person of her stature and of her winning ability is very important to have in an upcoming league. So I think we should just keep her with the Lynx. She's doing great.
I agree with you. And I also think that I think she'd do a good job with the Wolves. Oh, I just absolutely. Don't want to see her have to, you know, have to pour bleach, as I use the phrase, pour bleach on the entire organization. I also think that other women have become, like, for a while, Cheryl was the obvious person. If you're going to hire a woman to coach an NBA team, Cheryl was the obvious person. Now you have Becky Hammon working in the league, and she's this close to getting a head coaching job. At least she should be. There are other women coaches who could do the job and are kind of in position to do that. So I don't think Cheryl feels like she has to break down that barrier herself for the barrier to fall.
All right, moving on to, and this is going to sound weird coming from me, but it's coming from you, why I love the Ryder Cup.
I love the Ryder Cup. I love everything about it. And there are obvious reasons for loving the Ryder Cup. It's match play, which is fascinating. It's, you know, you have the mix of nationalism, which gets people really fired up. And the golf courses are, of course, beautiful. And it plays out over 3 days. It's, to me, it's great entertainment. But I'm going to take it a step farther than I ever had before in explaining why I love the Ryder Cup. You know why I love the Ryder Cup? It's because almost all of these guys were country club kids. The hardest thing they ever dealt with in their life was the ability to make a 3-foot putt. You know, they were privileged. These are, and not all of them. Tony Finau learned how to play golf hitting the ball into a mattress in his garage. I love Tony Finau because of that, because he's not a privileged kid. Most of these people were privileged. Doesn't make them bad human beings. It just means that they had advantages that the average person doesn't have. And you know what I love to see, Brandon? I love to see people who had those privileges, who have always played for themselves and their own bank accounts. I love to see them put under the pressure of playing for something other than themselves. Playing for a teammate, playing for a team, and playing for their country. Because some of them can't handle it. It's a great character test.
I will take your word for it, as I always say. Last up on the 2-minute drills is separated twins.
So part of it is because I covered the Olympics. But that's not the only reason. I don't think I've ever spent less time at a major league ballpark than I did this year. Since I started covering baseball in 1993, I don't think I've ever spent less. And part of it is COVID. It's not as rewarding to go to the ballpark when you can't work the locker room, when you can't, you know, work the dugout. Part of it is the Olympics. I was gone for basically a month. But part of it is that I'm just not very interested in this team. And it's not because they're bad guys. There are a lot of good people. I like a lot of these people personally. I just find it to be a horrible product. They don't have enough pitching. The games don't mean anything in the standings. The players who are interesting to watch are often hurt or resting. And I brought this up before on our Chin Music show with Lavelle and Roy, and they probably have a different perspective on it than I do, because they're both so invested in baseball. For me, baseball is one of my many options. And I wonder if baseball is losing me, how many casual fans they're losing with 3.5-hour games, with constant pitching changes, with to me it's a boring product, and unless Byron Buxton is at his best and playing in meaningful games, this sport is losing me, and I don't know if I'm unique in that regard or not.
You know, the only thing that's actually getting me out to see a Twins game this year, and that's going to be on Sunday, is the tickets were free. So that goes to show you how I feel about the Twins this year as well.
And one thing that has gone on in American media since, I'd say, the 80s, when the NFL started kind of taking over as the most popular sport and baseball started facing some of its own problems, whether it was greenies or steroids or whatever else, is, you know, too many people constantly have predicted the doom of baseball. Because they feel like, okay, you're not matching up with the NFL, it means you're dying. You're not, you know, your tickets are more expensive, you're dying. You're not getting as many kids to the ballpark, you're dying. And none of those predictions have turned out to be true. Baseball is still a thriving industry, still makes a lot of money, still gets huge television contracts, winning teams still draw plenty of fans. But I just wonder if it will hit a critical mass where you're asking people to go out and spend a lot of money to watch 3.5 hours in which very little happens. I just wonder if it all comes true at one point in the next 5-10 years. All right, let's let you have listen to my conversation with David Barry. Great guy, great sports analyst, someone who brings a different perspective. As promised, today's guest is David Barry. I've already told you all about him. We're going to get right to the news of the week. The Minnesota Lynx are in the playoffs for the 11th straight season, have a pretty good chance to advance to the semifinals and have a chance to win in the semifinals, and the Minnesota Timberwolves are blowing up their organization again. Let's start with the WNBA. you know, I felt like all year the Lynx were kind of this cool overachieving story, and, you know, and there are a lot of great teams in the league, and Cheryl's kind of remaking the roster on the fly. And man, if they can just have a good season, overcome that 0-4 start, that'd be pretty cool. And now all of a sudden you look at it and you go, God, they might be the second or third best team in the league. What's your view of this WNBA season and this Lynx team, their chances?
Well, you got to understand the 0-4 start was mostly without Nafisa Collier wasn't yep. there. And they also didn't have a true point guard on the roster. And so that was fixed after four games. And then after those four games, they played 28 games, won 22 of them. That's not very far off the pace of the Aces and the Sun. So I don't think it's the case the Sun and Aces are immensely better than the Lynx. So the Lynx have a pretty good, you know, they have a chance of winning a title this year. I don't know that they're not the absolute favorite by any means. But they certainly are competitive with anybody. And so, you know, it was a case where when the season started, the roster wasn't put together yet. And then you had the issue with Powers. Powers was not, didn't play well initially, and then she was hurt. And then when she comes back, very different player in the last five, six games. And so this is a team that has a lot of different weapons. A lot of very good players. Sylvia Fowles is playing amazingly well. She was the most productive player in the WNBA this last year. So you know, there's just a lot of talent on this roster. And it's been this way, you know, it has been this way for the last 11 years. There's been a lot of roster turnover, and the Lynx keep winning year after year after year because they have somebody picking the players who knows something about doing that. And then the Timberwolves, of course, never win because they have people picking the players who don't know how to do that. And so that is the story of Minnesota basketball.
It is. It's the fascinating thing is that Glenn Taylor, you know, owns and runs both organizations. And one is the essence of stability and success. And the other one is one of the worst franchises in the history of professional sports. It's amazing. So if you were going to give advice to the Minnesota Timberwolves today in the wake of them firing Rosas and promoting Sachin Gupta, what would your advice be?
They should wander down the hallway to Cheryl Reeves' office and say, hypothetically speaking, imagine you were going to run the Timberwolves. Just give us a hint. Give us some sort of clue about what you would do, because clearly we don't know what we're doing. That would be, I mean, that's the obvious story there, right? If you knew what you were doing, this would not be such a disaster. And it's pretty clear the Timberwolves do not know what they're doing. This is no evidence that they know what they're doing. It's clear they're guessing, and they're guessing wrong a lot. They're apparently they're trying to build a team around Anthony Edwards. Is there anyone who believes that's going to work out? That doesn't seem likely. It's clear. I don't think anyone in the Timberwolves clearly, if you ask them, name your most productive players, name your players who are not productive, I feel on that quiz they would not get 100%. I don't think they know the answers. I just feel like this is a class that doesn't quite know the answer. They didn't study hard enough. It really is, you know, you look at what Cheryl Reeves achieved and how much roster turnover there has been. And there's only one player left from the title team, and that's Sylvia Fowles. And you can't win with just one player. That's not possible in basketball. You have to have other players. She completely remade the roster, and she kept winning. So she knows things that they don't know. And so they would do well to listen.
The other aspect of it is that, yes, Cheryl is very good at basketball and analytics and analyzing players and understanding what creates a winning team. She also has the ability to be a leader. She has the ability to be someone who is admired and who's someone who can get on you and keep your respect. She can handle people. She has good relationship with the people around her. And, you know, if I'm writing a column about this, like I think three of the last four or five general managers the Timberwolves have hired from outside the organization have been utter disasters as human beings. David Kahn was a joke. Tom Thibodeau is a good coach and a terrible general manager who nobody wanted to work with. And, you know, obviously Gerson Rosas, who, you know, this is all kind of a little bit, this is still in the breaking news category. Gerson was actually fairly popular outside the organization because he was pretty good at glad handing and, you know, acting like a human being. But now we're hearing what was really going on in the organization. You know, he was not somebody anybody wanted to really work with or for. I mean, you know, that's another big thing about Cheryl is that people respect her.
Yeah, that's an underrated part of working in sports, in that, yeah, you have to be able to work with other people and get them to buy into what you're doing. And you know, there's a lot of history in sports of people who thought they understood how a game would be played, but didn't understand how to get people to buy into what their vision was. And, you know, you're not dealing with athletes are people. They're not robots, and people you work with aren't robots. And so you have to learn how to handle people and I think this is one thing that you have to be able to do as a leader. You have to be able to persuade people that what you want to have happen should happen. You can't order people to do what you want to have happen, because that produces a lot of pushback and a lot of outcomes that you don't want. And so I think a lot of leaders have difficulty understanding that their job is to persuade people that this is what I think our vision is and what we're trying to accomplish, and make sure that people who are working with you buy into your vision. And if they don't do that, then you can have the best idea in the world and it's never going to work because no one's going to go along with you.
One other thing I've appreciated about Cheryl is that she will proactively, if that's even a word, admit she's wrong about something. She'll say, you know what, I started out of the year, I was going to limit fouls as minutes, and then I realized that was stupid, so I stopped doing it. And she'll just come out and say it. And I think that buys her a lot of credibility in the organization with players. Because players know when you're trying to fool them.
Yeah, that's crucial. I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, my favorite example of a decision maker who just couldn't ever admit they were wrong and totally flamed out was Matt Patricia with the Detroit Lions. I mean, that was the whole thing. He believed he was the smartest guy in the room and he was never wrong. And, you know, game after game, year after year, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And you find out after he leaves, everybody hates him. And you're like, well, you can't run an organization where everyone hates you. That's not going to work. And you can't just keep doing things even though they're not working. The key is you have to be able to, when things aren't working, you got to go in a different direction. You got to say, okay, that didn't work. So clearly we have to try something else. And what you see in organizations that fail, they just can't walk away from their bad decisions in the past. They can't say, okay, we thought that was going to work and clearly it didn't work. And so now we got to do something else. And if you can't do that, well, then you'll just keep losing.
I know you are a Detroit sports fan. I have family in Detroit, and I commiserate with you. Is there hope for either the Detroit Lions or the Detroit Tigers?
The Tigers, since they started 9-24, are 10 games over 500 over their last.
Amazing. They're playing better than the White Sox.
And the thing is that they promised that they were building the Tigers through the draft. Virtually none of their draft picks are contributing to the success. It actually was just a case of they found some players that turned out to be productive. They could have done this 5 years ago. This has nothing to do with what their strategy was. So it is the case they finally found a manager. And the reason why they turned it around is because the manager looked at their roster after 33 games when they were the worst team in baseball and said, well, this isn't working, and just got rid of a bunch of people. Just said, you're gone. These people are out of here. We're going to go in a totally different direction. And he just kept trying to find people who would produce. And to me, that's what you're supposed to do. That's how it's supposed to go. You look at your roster and you say, that didn't work. Let's try this. And so I do think the Lions have the same philosophy. They made big changes between game one and game two, and they're making The thing is, one of their linebackers completely underperformed, and on Wednesday he's on the trading block. Didn't work. Go away. So that's exactly what you're. So I think that's the. If you look at any organization that is successful over time, it's because they understand when to make changes, when to accept that what you're doing isn't working. You don't just keep doing the same thing over and over and over again and the hope that it's going to change in some way. And I, you know, that's, I think that's the hallmark of what the Timberwolves problem is. Timberwolves make commitments to specific players. That, you know, how long do they stick with Andrew Wiggins?
Oh, 30 to 40 years, something like that.
and it was, Andrew Wiggins didn't perform well at Kansas. So it was known before he got to the NBA that he's just not what you think he is. You thought he was LeBron James. We saw him play at Kansas, and it was clear not LeBron James. That's not LeBron James out there. You're not seeing this. And they still acquired him, made him the centerpiece of the franchise. He insisted on not being LeBron James. And they and then after seeing him for a couple of years, they gave him a maximum contract and were like, again, not LeBron James. And you just keep doing that. You're like, why are we not winning? Well, you keep throwing resources at something that's not working, and you can't walk away and say, okay, that was wrong. I made a mistake. I thought it was going to be something different. It didn't work out. I need to make a different decision. And eventually they do, but they wasted so many years committing to this that they didn't have to do it that way. They could have known much earlier this wasn't going to work out. And so, you look at that roster that they have assembled, there isn't really a lot to build off of. And I think there's just a lot of the thought process appears to be, well, maybe the players will just suddenly start to play better. And in basketball, that's not very reasonable. I mean, the players in basketball are typically trying their hardest most of the time. And if they've not performed in the past, you know, D'Angelo Russell's not been a great player in the past. He's not going to become a great player. He's not going to suddenly transform into a great player. He was trying his best in the past, and what you saw was not great. So, therefore, give up. You can't keep building around him.
Yeah, it reminds me. I covered the Dallas Cowboys in 1989. They went 1-15 under Jimmy Johnson. And then I came to Minnesota, but I stayed in touch with people in that organization and people in that market as they developed into a championship team. And what I remember is Jimmy just being absolutely, you know, blunt and ruthless. He's like, okay, this isn't working. I'm going to do something. He went in wanting to throw the ball over the place. And then he realized, you know, if I keep dropping back and throwing 80 times a game, I'm just going to get my quarterback killed and I'm going to lose games. And so he went and drafted Emmitt Smith, started running the ball. That made Aikman better. It's like, you know, he was completely willing to change any of his preconceived notions if it was going to benefit him, and it led to a pretty good place.
And if you think about the decision, the first decision, major decision he made was getting rid of Herschel Walker, and and people don't recognize from that worked out so amazingly well for the Cowboys. But initially, when that was proposed, from my understanding in the Dallas organization, people are like, are you insane? That is the only player we have who's any good.
Yep.
And there he's like, it's the only asset I got. I need other assets. I got to do something. I'm not going to win with Herschel Walker. So I'm just going to trade him for as many assets as I can get and try and build with that. And that's the kind of decision-making you have to make. You have to look at, given what I have right now, is this going to turn into a championship? And if the answer is no, well, then I've got to make different decisions. And that's the hallmark of good decision-making. And bad decision-making is stick with the same thing you're doing. If you go back to the Lions example, Lions are a team that throughout their history that I've followed them, they've typically hired systems coaches who were committed to a specific way of playing football, whether it's the West Coast offense or the Tampa Bay defense or the New England way. And then they would try to fit players to their system. And that never works. You can't do that. You have to look at your roster and go, this is what you do well. Let me design a strategy that will take advantage of whatever talents you have. And that means you're not committed to anything. I don't have any beliefs. I don't have any philosophies. If running the football is going to work, I'll do that. If passing works, I'll try that. If this defense works, I'll do that. And that's how you do things. And that's what makes success. You can't say, I believe a certain thing, and therefore I just keep doing it over and over and over again. That's
Let's wrap up with a little more WNBA talk here. Connecticut Sun, you know, in terms of record, they were, and the way they finished the season, they were the dominant team in the league. But, you know, it sounded like you're not considering them just a prohibitive favorite, or what's your view of the Lynx chances of beating a team like that if it comes to that?
Well, yeah, the Sun do look better than the Lynx, but that doesn't mean the Lynx can't beat them. This is not a case where this team is light years ahead of the Lynx, and we already know the Sun are going to win before we even start. So the Sun clearly are the favorites, but you know they can be beat. The Lynx did beat the Sun this year in a game, mm-hmm. so that did actually happen. And so it is the case that in a series, if the Lynx do get to the finals, and they have to get through the Aces, I think, to do that. If they get through the Aces, they won the season series against the Aces.
They did. They beat Vegas, I think, 2 out of 3 this year.
Yeah. So if they can get through the Aces and get to the finals, it's a 5-game series. I mean, you know, they have Sylvia Fowles. They have. I think that the key for the Lynx is Nafisa Collier. If Nafisa Collier plays as she's capable of playing, then the Lynx most definitely can beat the Sun. And so it's going to be. If Nafisa goes out there and she shoots efficiently and she rebounds, then the Lynx are going to be very, very difficult to beat. And so that's going to be where the series sort of rides on. So I think the Lynx have a good chance of getting to the finals. And once there, it's going to be, can Nafisa and Sylvia Fowles do this? And we all should note also, it is an odd year in that it's an odd number year, and Cheryl Reeve always wins that odd number. Therefore, there is that math as well. So that's also, so if I were the Connecticut Sun, I'd be worried because it's like 2021. Why couldn't we begin in 2022? This is the wrong year. It's an odd number year. We have no hope in this year.
Well, that's analytics right there.
There you go. Well, that's numbers. Yeah. I'm just doing the numbers. I'm just saying what the numbers say, and that's what it says.
Good stuff, David. I want to have you back on sometime soon to talk about NIL and how it's affecting college sports and all kinds of other stuff. But today, just wanted to hit a lot of basketball topics. Thank you so much, and hope to talk to you soon.